This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Chris Gates is the executive director of PACE, Philanthropy for Active Civic Engagement, online at pacefunders.org, and past president of the National Civic League. Good afternoon, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
I'm very good. What's the weather like in Denver?
Well, we just had an incredible hailstorm that left about 4 inches of hail in central Denver. So it's been that kind of day.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
It's just the opposite of the weather that we currently have. Beautiful here in Virginia, though they say we might have a little bit of rain this weekend. But Chris, in the last half hour, we were talking with Preston Bryant, the Secretary of Natural Resources for Virginia. And he was talking about the fact that Virginia has signed on to a climate registry to track greenhouse emissions, joining a host of other states who are doing so, I guess recognizing that they don't see the leadership in the Bush administration in Washington, so they're sort of forming their own thing here. But as he was talking, I was thinking here that it's interesting to see that the debate about global warming by a lot on the right, certainly not all, but by a lot on the right, seems to have quieted a little bit. And it's just, you know, if you go back a few years ago, if you talked about global warming, boy, they just came out of everywhere to attack you and call you a nut. And don't you get it? You're just it's some conspiracy theory. But we don't really hear that as much anymore.
It is an interesting shift, and I think that, you know, that the only way that conversation would get reignited is if Al Gore were to get in the presidential race, and I think then the debate would gin up again. But I think that people have come to the conclusion that if 98 doctors tell you you've got cancer and two say that you don't, it doesn't mean that you're going to avoid treatment. The people have figured out that the science of this issue is pretty overwhelming, and I think there is a general recognition that the federal government isn't doing much, and states are now taking it on. But I don't know if you saw in the news about 10 days ago that Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York City, convened a group of mayors from all over America, and mayors from all over America have made this pledge to cut their carbon footprint, and Bloomberg has promised that every cab will be emission neutral in, I think, 3 or 4 years, a very short period of time. And so it's been interesting to see state and local government, which I think in general tend to be a little more nimble and able to be responsive, really take this issue on, while many in the federal government still sort of debate the issue, which at this point feels a little bit like a five-year-old conversation.
Speaking of debating the issue, let's turn to immigration. Certainly, that has been a hot topic now for a while, and it looks like there might be some legislation that President Bush can sign. From where you sit, what's happening with this issue?
Well, it's one of those really interesting dilemmas. It's like playing political jumble. You sort of shake up all the interests and throw the cards on the table, and it's a different configuration. President Bush has actually been on the side of the Democrats in the Senate for a long time. There obviously needs to be some level of forgiveness for people who have been in the country for a long time. There needs to be some level of effort to secure the borders. There needs to be some level of effort to create a coherent plan, a clear plan for people to enter the country and gain citizenship. And it's really been people on the fringe in the House side that have held up progress and that are unable to live with, you know, any reasonable middle ground solution. And it appears that he has succeeded in forcing the issue with his own party and moving toward this middle ground position that I think moderate Republicans and moderate Democrats have probably held for some time. But it was the radical, hardcore right in the House that had held the issue of immigration hostage for really over 2 years.
It is interesting to see Bush take a moderate position on this when that's not usually his bent to do that, to side with the moderate Republicans of his own party. But is this, you think, because he is a former border governor and he understands what's going on in these border states?
Absolutely. It's funny when you hear the president talk about immigration, it is, from my estimation, one of the few issues where he absolutely sounds and feels authentic, because it's an issue he totally knows. He gets it, and he understands that sort of a blind, close the border, these are bad people, they're hurting America answer is naive. It's not reflective of the reality of life in America, economic life in America. And so I think this is one of the issues that he absolutely knows backwards and forwards, and he understands, as you say, a former border governor, the governor of Texas, that it is a simplistic and short-sighted solution to think that we can sort of round up everybody who is undocumented, send them back, and tell them to send in their application and their application fee. That's just not a realistic way to move forward. And so it's interesting that on one of the issues where he really does seem to have experience and a personal point of view, not one necessarily crafted for him by his aides, that this is, as you say, an issue where he has moved toward the moderate middle.
Chris Gates is the executive director of Philanthropy for Active Civic Engagement. You can check him out online at pacefunders.org. Speaking of President Bush, let's turn to some issues now before his administration, beginning with the elephant in the room is the war in Iraq. It looks like he held up any success on the part of the Democratic Party recently with their proposed legislation, but the talk in Washington is that the Republicans are going to figure out a way to bring the troop level down and then take credit for a successful war.
Yeah, it was interesting to watch the whole thing play out. I mean, as I think Speaker Pelosi said, if the president wanted to send the signal that this is his war, he succeeded in doing it. And if I were a Republican running for Congress or the Senate or president in 2008, frankly, I'd be petrified, and I would hope with all the hope I had in my heart that there was another card to be played in this game, because the American public have made it very clear, and there's no polling data that would contradict it, that says that the American public have come to the conclusion that this is a bad war, that it's not productive, it's not achieving the goals that it was set out to, that it was entered into under false pretext. And so, personally, I think that Democrats railing against the war is, you know, part of the game, and nobody blinks when they hear it. But when Republicans start saying we've got to bring the troop levels down, when Republicans say that this war doesn't make sense, which I think is only a matter of months before Republican presidential candidates look at their poll numbers and say that the last thing that they can afford for the 2008 presidential election to be is a referenda on the war in Iraq, that's when you'll start to see change, when Republicans abandon the president. And, he held people tight for now, but you can see the cracks in the dike, and it's only a matter of time before the water starts flowing through.
We're talking with Chris Gates of Philanthropy for Active Civic Engagement, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. If they pull down the troop level, they're certainly not going to pull out with the investment that's been made in, I think, five major bases in Iraq.
Right.
Of course, we took them out of Saudi Arabia, which is exactly what bin Laden wanted pre-9/11.
That worked out pretty well, didn't it?
He got everything he wanted, didn't
he?
Right. You know, I mean, his terrorists are no longer training on monkey bars. They got real war situations now to train in.
Yeah.
And he got American troops out of Saudi Arabia, which I think was first on his list of demands.
Yeah, that, in fact, was really what motivated the beginning of all of this.
Yeah. So I certainly don't see us pulling out of Iraq entirely with all the new bases over there. Are we setting ourselves up for another Beirut, where we have our men and women sort of huddled together in these little bases in a country that doesn't want them there?
Well, I think you're right that it's unrealistic to think that we're going to sort of start a 20,000 troops a month withdrawal till we get down to zero. That we've created this, and that even if you, it is. One of the reasons why I think the folks at MoveOn.org have almost fundamentally missed the point with their sort of threats of political retribution for Democrats who voted with this bill to fund the troops. The truth is that we're going to be there for a while, and we can. What will absolutely bleed the tension out of the situation politically in America will be for a withdrawal timetable to be set and for some troops to start coming home. Once that happens, my guess is that the political anger will dissipate pretty quickly, which is why I think that the Democrats and some people on the left are putting far too much stock in the war in Iraq as the issue that's going to hold power for them in Congress and win the presidency in 2008. Because, as you say, if the Republicans put through the moderate bill that has the support of the president that begins some level of withdrawal, then they get the credit for doing it. And if that's the only issue you are running on, then you just lost, you know, your sole reason for being. And I think that most people think that once there's a prospect of a new president, it's hard to imagine right now, but once there's a prospect of a new president, then the situation will have changed enough that the United States can go back to the UN and ask the UN to put together a UN force. Right now, it would be nearly impossible, based on the international politics that have played out in the last 4 years, for this administration to ask the UN to reconsider their decision about putting a force into Iraq. But if there was a new president and a new moment, I think that other countries would probably be willing to step in, and I think that's clearly what's required there, that as the U.S. starts to pull back, that a more international force needs to step in, and that the prospect of a diverse international military force, peacekeeping force, would change the dynamic of the military politics in Iraq, that people would have less motivation to kill people because, you know, the American behemoth, the American enemy would be leaving.
What do you think of the chances that we'll see Middle Eastern forces among that international force, perhaps even Iranian troops?
Iran and Syria are sort of a separate conversation, but I think that you could easily imagine that Jordan and Egypt and Saudi Arabia would be willing to throw in and help, because the destabilization and the notion that al-Qaeda would be potentially getting a foothold in a destabilized Iraq is bad for every moderate Middle Eastern democracy that exists.
Let's turn to talk of the presidential campaigns, which are already going on, even though we're not voting until November of 2008.
It sort of makes you wonder if people didn't like get their calendars confused. People are running as if the election is next month, and they seem to forget that the fundamental rule of politics is that there's only one day on which you have to be ahead, and that's election day. And if you look at the campaigns of some of these candidates, it's almost like they think that the nomination is going to be decided in you know, July of 2007, and such has never been the case.
Yeah, I can't believe we have these major debates going on now. Let's look at the right and the left, beginning with the right. What's going on with the right now in the presidential campaigns?
Well, it's stunningly destabilized. Giuliani leads in every national poll, and yet almost every major constituency of the party, of the Republican Party, says that he's an unacceptable candidate. Mitt Romney has raised unbelievable amounts of money and is an incredibly attractive candidate, and yet again, some parts of the party say that he's unacceptable, and the evangelical Christians say that the Mormon faith is a cult, and the interesting internal politics of the Republican Party on that front. And then McCain, peaked 6 months ago, and now appears to be just trying to claw and scratch his way through this dead period where things are not going well for him. And then you got people like Fred Thompson, who I think is going to be in Virginia soon, toying with the idea, flirting with the idea of a candidacy, and being an incredible tease. And I am sure that if you're in the Romney or Giuliani or McCain campaign, that you just want to strangle the guy because, he is allowing people to defer their decision. He's allowing people to say, well, I'm going to wait and see what Thompson does before I decide which way to go on this. And I just think that people forget how long, if the first primaries aren't until January, February of next year, how long 6 or 7 or 8 months are in American politics. They are forever. And who knows where the war is going to be? Who knows where the economy is going to be? Who knows where the stock market is going to be? And this frantic scratching for leads in meaningless national early polls just strikes me as first of all, a waste of resources, and second of all, a misunderstanding of the process.
If we have Fred Thompson on the right getting the spotlight in the wings, is there anyone in the wings on the left that poses any kind of challenge to Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama?
Well, I mean, I think you've got to put John Edwards in that. Most seasoned political observers believe that Edwards has played this absolutely perfectly, and that that watching Barack and Hillary pursue a policy of mutually assured destruction is nothing but positive. If you're sitting in the Edwards campaign on a large amount of money, leads in four of the five first states that will hold primaries or caucuses, you really have to say that it's a Edwards, Hillary, Barack race, and Edwards appears to be the guy who gets it most. That you have to avoid peaking too early, and Barack, as he has done well in some of these early national polls, has become an incredible target. Hillary's got one negative book out this past weekend, another that will be out soon, and the long knives are out, and the word within the Democratic Party is that operatives of Barack are leaking all the negative stuff about Hillary, operatives of Hillary are leaking all the bad stuff about Barack, and that can make, you know, John Edwards nothing but happy. So I think that it's really those three that are running, and, you know, Joe Biden and Bill Richardson appear to be in a spirited second-tier race for who's going to be the vice presidential nominee and who's going to be Secretary of State, and that's been sort of fun to watch. But I think as far as an outside player, that, you know, there's still some talk about Gore, and I think the New York Times ran a piece last month saying that of his 20 top fundraisers, that I think it was 12 of them had yet to declare a candidate, and that led to some speculation that he might think about getting in, but on the barometer that I think most people think is the most accurate, which is Al Gore's weight. He appears to weigh as much as he ever possibly have, and most of the people who read the tea leaves of that candidacy think that if that's the case, he probably has decided that he's not going to run.
Chris Gates is the Executive Director of Philanthropy for Active Civic Engagement, online at pacefunders.org, and he's past president of the National Civic League. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Happy to do it.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, sevillepodcast.com.
You've been listening to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. The show can be heard every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 o'clock on News Radio 1070 WINA. This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at sevillepodcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, why not check out our site for hours and hours of archives of Coy's show? You'll also find other radio programs, arts features, public affairs coverage, and more.